At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll and home of the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling. Hey, listen, when I was little, my mom fed me alphabet soup, claiming I liked it. Turns out she was just putting words in my mouth. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Ah, that was a good one. It was cute, as the kids say. Thanks to Duff for bringing the funny every single Friday. Duff and Guns N' Roses are down under as well. They're playing Perth tonight. Well, guess what? I'm headed to Australia as well. Fozzy's going to be there at the end of the month, November 30th. We start. We're doing our legendary VIP meet and greets as well. There's only tickets left in Adelaide for that, though. Brisbane VIP, Sydney VIP, Melbourne VIP are all sold out. Adelaide, there's still a couple of VIP tickets for you, but there's tickets for all the shows available at FozzyRock.com. Come check us out. It's going to be a great tour after we just finished our biggest UK tour ever. We sold thousands and thousands of tickets and had 10 great shows. Thanks to all of you who came to the gigs, and thanks to all of you who are going to come see us in Australia while we were there. And don't forget about Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea, the four-leaf clover. We set sail February 2nd. The lineup on this ship is stacked, and we are adding new guests every week. But let's talk about this lineup for this year. All right, who we got from AEW coming? I'll tell you what, how about the Jericho Appreciation Society? Daniel Garcia, Sammy Guevara, Jake Hager, Daddy Magic Matt Menard, Cool Hand Angelo Parker, Ty Mello, Anna Jay. We also got Dante Martin, Swerve Strickland, Jade Cargill, Eddie Kingston, Wardlow, The Acclaimed, Nyla Rose, Vicky Guerrero. So many more to be announced. Do not miss out on the vacation of a lifetime, because we also got comedy, music, live podcasts, paranormal shows, so much stuff going on. Don't forget about the first Jericho Cruise Oceanic Champion. The tournament for that will take place on the Four Leaf Clover. We're also going to our own private island for the first time ever in Great Stirrup Cay. Book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. All right, today, Lee Moriarty from AEW makes his Talk is Jericho debut. Lee was part of MJF's faction, The Firm, until they beat him down. He also talks about how that all came together, what it was like to be part of the group. He doesn't even know whose faction it was when they first signed on to be part of it. It's a great story. Lee also talks about his time in the Indies, teaming up with Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia, who are both also now at AEW. He explains Taiga style, what that means to him, and how it's evolved over the last year. He talks about his degree in graphic design. He's a very smart guy as well. His love of streetwear and how he used all of that to further his wrestling career. He talks about his goals as a wrestler and beyond. Great conversation with a very interesting and intelligent Lee Moriarty right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. So one of the cool things about being in AEW is we have a lot of young talent, and this is something that, like, I think I'm here with Lee Moriarty, and I think we've been nice and cordial, but I don't think we've said more than four or five words or sentences to each other. And I literally, like, know nothing about you, and I say that in the best possible way. Like, I'm super excited to get to know you, right?
Right.
Because I remember hearing your name, I guess, like a year ago in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, that was my first match.
First match with AEW, and then here you are now, of course, part of The Firm, and one of your co-members of The Firm is a big fan of yours. MJF was talking about Lee Moriarty, and he's got a lot of talent and he's got a lot of personality. I was like, well, let me see. Let's have him on Talk as Jericho. see what's going on, man. Let me just start out by this. Probably the biggest match of your career tonight.
Yeah.
On Dynamite versus Jon Moxley.
Man, that was a dream match for me. There's like a list of people in AEW I've wanted to work with. You're also one of them. But people I feel like I can grow with competing against, and him being a three-time world champion, the only three-time world champion in the company, and for what AEW stands for in professional wrestling, that's my dream match. That was my goal, and I got there, and I'm very proud of what I was able to do.
So that was kind of on your list when you came here prior?
Yeah.
How did you find out that it was coming about?
Last Friday. So we attacked Moxley on Wednesday. I had no idea that it was going to lead to a match the following week, but Friday we did that promo to set everything up after his match with Matt Menard in your group, and then we got a week's time to prepare.
So did it go the way that you would hope? And obviously you didn't get the victory, but yeah, that doesn't really matter at this stage of the game.
I think although I didn't get the victory, I showed that I can compete at that level. Mm-hmm. Especially, I haven't been on Dynamite in some time. The competition's so high, I need to step up. And I feel like in my time away, I have been working hard, getting in better shape, studying more. So I think I did my job and I did well, although I didn't get the win. But I think I'm getting closer to having that big breakout win.
Well, you did get a win just by being on Dynamite with Mox, right?
Right.
Before we continue, so during your time away, were you hurt or were you off for a bit?
No, it was just taking time off because we didn't know the direction I was going to go in at the time. Mm. And then when I took the card from Stokely, the idea was to disappear for a while so no one knew what was coming. So when we returned that All Out, you know, no one expected it. No one could prepare for it when we climbed up that ladder and got the poker chip for MJF.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that for a bit because, you know, and we'll go through kind of your history, but when you mentioned the formation of the firm, which was at All Out, right? And that's when the devil came and this kind of this debut of this new faction. Of course, I'm no stranger to factions and I'm no stranger to surprise debuts of factions. I think that's when Max started the Pinnacle, kind of something similar.
Right.
So, you know, I know for me, like when I have, okay, here's Matt Menard or Jeff Parker or Danny Garcia or Sammy Guevara, it's like we're going to be doing this together. And, you know, guys are kind of excited or maybe a little bit tentative. So how did you kind of find out that this was going to be happening?
It was a very well-kept secret. I didn't know it was MJF until that night.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, tell us about that. How do you mean?
So the way it started was, I was with Matt Sydal and Dante Martin in kind of a group.
Right.
Tony Khan pulled me inside in the locker room. He asked me a question. He said, would you be comfortable dyeing your hair? Didn't explain why or anything like that. He just said it'll come with a big push and things like that, more opportunities. So I was like, yeah, I'm cool with it. My trainers taught me, like, take something if they give it to you and just make the most of it. It's like, it's hair. It'll grow back in the future. But that happened. They didn't really tell me exactly what. They just said it was going to be a group. Stokely told me it's going to be a big thing, and I trusted everyone who's, you know, told me about it. I trusted Tony, I trusted QT, I trusted Stokely. After I took that business card, when I defeated Matt Sydal back in July, disappeared for a month, came back, and then, you know, did the poker chip. I didn't know it was MJF till afterwards. So after he got the poker chip, walked off, we went back to his trailer and we found out. But it was a really well-kept secret.
This is pretty cool because I always love it when, you know, these super secret kind of midnight Candlestein things happen. So did you know who else was in the group?
I didn't know until I was watching at home. The only person I knew was Ethan Page because I heard them talking about the promo that they had when Stokely was going to offer the card. But before that, I didn't know the Guns were going to be in it. I didn't know Morrissey was going to be in it. But whenever I saw Morrissey, that's when I kind of leaned towards, I think it's MJF, but I never had concrete evidence.
Why is that?
Just because I felt like it could go different directions. It could be this and be this, especially because when you look at everyone in our group on paper, it doesn't look like it fits together. Mm. But it works because we're just like the Suicide Squad. We're a band of misfits. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I thought that about the Inner Circle when we first formed. It was like, I remember the first photo shoot we did, like everyone looks different, but there's this kind of a theme, like it almost like the early Guns N' Roses, where there's a punk guy, there's a metal guy, there's a long hair, there's a, you know, and that's kind of the Inner Circle. Like it just looks good, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of with the firm where you have these different people coming, but when you see a group shot or something, it's like, okay, this kind of looks kind of cool. Like you said, Suicide Squad-y.
Right. It's a starting five in a basketball team.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody has their own special thing that they do. Ethan Page is the well-rounded, the movie star, good looks, all this stuff. Morrissey's the big giant enforcer, the guns, the tag team specialist, who are also very charismatic and a lot of personality. Me, the technical wrestler. And I think I have personality. I have this energy. It's just figuring out how to show it. And yeah. I'm getting more into that with the hair and stuff and trying to, you know, wear brighter colors. I wore a green jersey last week when everyone else was wearing black. It helped me stand out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's what I said, for MJF to kind of unpromoted to start talking about you that way.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's interesting. You know what I mean? There must be something there that he sees. So I really like this story, though. So you find out that you're in this thing with Stokely.
Yeah.
You're not sure when it's going to be, but if you choose to accept it, go away. So did you know you were away for a month, or are you just kind of on call like a surgeon waiting for the phone to ring?
So before my match with Seidel, which was my last one, Stokely told me, he said, hey, you might be gone for a couple of weeks, but don't take it personal like you did anything wrong. I didn't know how long it was going to be. I didn't know we were coming back at All Out or anything until maybe the week of. That Sunday, I got the text, hey, bring a black mask, the gloves, the black pants, and have your hair dyed and be ready. So I had no inkling, but I trusted people. Like, I knew people have my best interests, so I was cool with it. It was just one of those things, like waiting at home. Can't do independence either because I had to be gone, disappear, like offline, everything. I couldn't tweet anything at all. So it was nice to have that break, but also me as a competitor, as a wrestler and an athlete, I want to stay consistent.
These might be my two new favorite words, Mint Mobile. And if you're wondering why, I got a lot of reasons. First, Mint Mobile offers premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month with no catch. Yeah, you heard that right. No catch. No fine print ripoffs. Plans start at $15 a month, period. All Mint Mobile plans come with an unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Do you need more reasons than that? You do? Okay, how about these? You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and you can keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. That's right. And that all still starts at just $15 a month. And how about this? At Mint, families start at two lines. Now, do you understand why Mint Mobile are my two new favorite words, right? So get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped right to your door for free. Go to mintmobile.com/Jericho. That's mintmobile.com/Jericho. Cut your wireless bill to just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Jericho. So tell us about the day. So now you know, okay, you got to be it All Out, bring your black mask and all these other things.
Right.
And what kind of happens during the course of the day?
I get in, I meet Morrissey for the first time. He's hard to miss in the middle of the ring. I talk to him and I just tell him things like, hey, do you know who this guy in the group is? And he's like, yeah, but I don't know how much I'm allowed to say because pretty much everyone's sworn in secrecy about it. See the guns, we're all meeting in the corner of the ring. MJF doesn't tell us, but he kind of gives the pointers to Stokely to tell us what is going on.
Is he there?
I think he's there. So
okay, but you're not talking to him. Stokely's speaking on behalf of the mystery man.
Yeah, Stokely is the communication between MJF and us and everyone else, and also Pat Buck, one of the agents.
But they're not saying who it is. They're saying
no.
Mr. X or whatever.
No,
it is.
Yeah. I think they just wanted to keep it a genuine surprise. Sure. They didn't want anything to leak or anything like that. Which I completely understand. I'm glad it worked out that way. But yeah,
I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in this day, everyone wants to know the answers right away, right?
Yeah, and I don't think anything came up online. Like, there might have been some people hinting or guessing at it because I think someone realized it had been about 90 days since he walked out. So they assumed, like, oh, if he got suspended 90 days, it would make sense.
Yeah.
But there's no one was like, this is him. This is confirmed. It was all speculation. Mm-hmm. But we did that, we talked about it. Kind of had our own little corner just to plan things, and then the moment came, the first match on Dynamite, the opener, the ladder match, everyone's going crazy hard. Claudio, the Lucha Bros, Yuta, Dante, people were working in that match. And then even them, as far as I know, they didn't know too much. They didn't know it was MJF. They just knew, hey, someone's coming down and getting that poker chip. But they were kind of surprised too. And I remember Alex Abrahantes is out there, and I remember hitting him, and he's just like, what is going on? Because I think He may have been Spartan up, but not exactly. So he didn't know how
so
many.
So even the guys in the match didn't know what the finish was, really.
Not completely, no. And they definitely
super,
didn't know.
Such a Max thing. That's super, like, always wants to fool everybody.
Yeah.
We had a couple of those in the year that we worked. He was like, why don't you pretend, like, just fool everything? They really broke your arm. I was like, dude, I can't do that. He's like, I'm going to do it. So I like the idea of that the guys in the match didn't even know. So then, because, you know, it's funny, because once again, I didn't really know for sure.
Right.
But I saw Max with the devil mask and the way he was sitting. And it's like, I know him. And it's like, I didn't go up to him or say anything because he was sitting at gorilla position. This is real behind the scenes stuff. But the mask looked so cool. It was like really like black phone type of a thing. But just the way he was sitting there, and it was just like, okay, that's there he is, right? So when he comes down, you still don't know. Here's then you must have thought, okay, was there any other candidates that you thought it might be?
Not necessarily. So I thought before members of the group, I thought maybe Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page were involved because of that. But in terms of leaders, I was like, this is either going to be someone new who hasn't been a part of AEW yet, or maybe MJF, but I wasn't certain. Right,
pretty much has to be one of those two options.
Yeah, and like you were saying, you saw him sitting, you kind of figured out when he walked into the ring, there were just certain ways like his body language moves. And I was like, okay, I definitely think I know.
And I think he was even trying not to do that, but when you try not to do that, you look even more. I remember once I had to dress like Santa Claus for Christmas Raw.
Right.
And the idea was that Big Show and I were never allowed to tag team again. But Santa was going to sit on Big Show's lap and ask him what he wanted for Christmas, and Big Show would say, I would like to tag with Chris Jericho again, and Santa grants him the wish. So in WWE world, that means we can tag together again. Yeah. But I remember Vince was like, you can't let anyone know that you're Santa Claus. Like, you got to change that walk of yours. It was that effeminate walk. And I was like, how do I change my walk? So I'm trying to do like some kind of weird limp or something like that. And it's like, by doing a weird limp, I look even more like me trying to walk.
Yeah.
And Max, I saw a little bit of Max maybe trying to change his walk, but hard to do that.
Yeah. A lot of that stuff is just ingrained in who you are, and it's natural. I remember on the Independents, I competed on a show called The Masked Wrestler, which is a parody of The Masked Singer.
Oh, nice.
And I had to not wrestle as myself, so my thing was I was going to try to wrestle as Wheeler Yuta, and we ended up being in the finals competing against each other, but it's such a hard thing because I remember fans were like, oh, that's Lee. I was not doing anything I do, but just the way I move.
Just the way you move. So were you wearing weird costumes like The Masked Singer?
Yeah. So the first season was very generic, like, all
is it
black.
A show?
Yeah. It's an
actual show called The Masked Wrestler.
Yeah, on IWTV, they have two seasons. The first season, which is generic luchador mask, And
is
then,
that like a local channel? Or
it's on their streaming service, like IWTV, Independent Wrestling TV.
Okay,
like,
gotcha.
It was their own like unique content.
Gotcha. So so the first season was just kind of black luchador outfits.
Yeah, the second season is when they got like the characters like the Scarecrow and all that stuff. They really went in because the first season was pretty successful.
That's great. What is the one company? It's not Chikara. Was it Chikara had the weird costumes? There's one company in Japan that had the really weird.
Michinoku Pro? Maybe?
There was an offshoot of Michinoku, but yeah, definitely like the Greyhose and the weird type of things. So what was your character?
So my character, it was called Genkai. It was a reference to like an anime, which is a random name because everybody that came up. I remember there was one character, his name was Barf, which is all of these completely plain names. But also, they put me in like pink, which is my signature color, pink and yellow. So I think that was also kind of a hint at
giveaway.
It. Yeah. And I tried my best.
So when did you, so you're out there, the devil comes and grabs the chip. Mm-hmm. When do you finally realize who it is? Afterwards, is there a meeting or is it just kind of like, were you ever actually officially told? Do you even know for sure who the devil is now?
We found out 100%. Afterwards, like after everything, he just told us like, hey, sorry, you know, I couldn't tell anybody, but he wanted to keep it secret, and we understood, no hard feelings or anything like that. But shortly after the match we found out, and I was like, okay,
how did you feel with that?
It was relief because it was like, all right, now I know where we're doing, we know the direction we're going and things like that. We kind of know who's all a part of this, because like not knowing who's all a part of this was a little bit, not anxiety, but definitely like that nerve-wracking feeling, like what's going on, what's happening, because I didn't know anything.
Sure. It's a little Squid Games kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what is happening here? But now, like you mentioned, you know, you've been here for a short period of time and you're in this faction with one of our biggest stars. Must have made you feel kind of good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The fact that he trusted me to pick me to be in this group, the fact that Tony and everyone else trust me to be in that position means a lot. Even now, you know, we kind of kicked them to the curb, but we're doing our own things and we're making an impact. And that's important, especially because.
I told Stokely tonight, by beating up MJF, you're now way bigger than you were when you were his faction.
Right.
That's how it works. That's wrestling, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Why did Tony want you to dye your hair?
So I think it was Max's idea, but when Tony asked me, he couldn't say the name. So he basically referenced Rodman. And the idea was Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman was the enforcer of the group, this intense guy. I remember watching, the Michael Jordan documentaries.
Right.
And Rodman was saying, like, anytime they go to the bucket, you put them on the ground. And that's the thing. My job is to put people on the ground when I was with the firm because we were on retainer. So this was not a faction.
Gotcha.
This was MJF. He hired us to do what we did. We were mercenaries. We posed people on the ground. And also, I think it was, if you've ever watched one of the Rodman documentaries, they talk about how Rodman starts coming more out of his shell when he starts to dye his hair. Mm. Because that's when he gets to express more of his personality and things like that. Then he starts to paint his nails. He wears the crazy outfits and all that. So I think that was their thing. Like, hey, maybe this will help bring a little more energy out of him.
So just a matter of time before we see Lee Moriarty in a dress and heels.
It's definitely going to be something. I'm going to make it my own, but...
No, but it makes you stand out, right? And that's what we talked about, I think, last week. If you're going to have green hair, you should be green. And maybe next week it's pink. And next week, like, it's the best story. Norman Smiley, one of my earliest best friends in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever met Magic, but you know who he is, Norman Smiley.
Oh, yeah, I definitely know.
So he lost a hair match. Mm-hmm. And obviously, African-American, very short hair. Him without hair is pretty much similar to him with hair. It's not that much different. He was so embarrassed. He wore a hat all the time. He's like, I can't show my hair. Like, dude, you barely had any hair to begin with. What difference does it make? It'll grow back in 2 weeks. So it's kind of the same with you. If you want to dye it 16 different colors every week, it's okay, right? That gives you more of an identity.
Right. And like, I have ideas to make it my own. It's just figuring out how to do it. Like, I have the thought, I haven't done it yet, but putting words referencing my opponent or the storyline I'm going to in my head. Just different stuff, because I'm inspired by so many things outside of pro wrestling. I want to bring those into wrestling. And in time, people are going to see me turn up more and see my personality, who Lee Moriarty really is, not just as a wrestler, but as an artist, because that's who I am outside the ring.
And one last thing before I want to hear what you do outside of the ring, because that's interesting as well. But you're right, because, and I think we talked about this, anything you can do to stand out in wrestling, and if you feel it, it's going to work. And that, who knows what that is? It could be, you know, like I've told the story before with the Jericho Appreciation Society. When we first started, I said, who's your favorite musical artist? So-and-so. With this guy, that guy, whatever. If you were going to a party that was hosted by... you know, Kendrick Lamar, and it's an exclusive party and you can wear anything you want and all the chicks are there and all the dudes are there, but I don't care what it is. You want to wear a burlap sack? What would you wear to the most exclusive, hottest party in town held by your favorite? And the H guy had a thing. You can see Danny had the Kangol and Jeff wore, Angela wore the suspenders and Daddy Magic, you know, it was something.
Yeah.
And for me, when you started having the hair, it's like, okay, now, oh, that's the guy with the green hair. What's his name? Oh, it's Lee Moriarty. Oh, now that connects you with the crowd.
Right. It's very easy to tell who I am when you see the hair. And I was talking to Garcia before, and he was telling me you said that very thing. Mm. And also Ricky Starks, I was recently talking to him. He says, like, fans will send him pictures of, like, an outfit because – Ricky Starks has an established look.
Right.
Like, you see Ricky Starks, you see this, and you see this someone else, you're like, oh, this would look good on Ricky because that's his style.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to get into more of that and figuring out who my identity is, not in wrestling gear.
No, and like for every Halloween, I'll go through Twitter and Instagram and pick, you know, 20 pictures of people dressed as Chris Jericho, and there's always different eras, which I love. Like, that was always, for me, was David Bowie. Like, I'm a big Bowie fan where every album was something different. Every album had a different character. And that goes all the way until right before he died, when he was like 73. He still was creating new characters. And you should be able to walk into a Halloween party with 10 people all dressed as Bowie or Jericho or, I don't know, Madonna or someone who changes themselves and go, oh, that's, you know, that's Y2J Jericho. That's Le Champion. That's the demo. And I think that's a smart thing to start to think about for you.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely the goal. I think when I came in, what Tiger Style was something completely different than what it's evolving into right now.
First of all, what's Tiger Style? What does that mean to you?
Tiger Style is, originally, it was referencing from Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do. Bruce Lee removed patterns from martial arts because everything works different for everybody. In professional wrestling, I don't want to say I'm a hybrid because that word gets used so often. So my own thing is adapting all the sounds. Like, I went to Mexico to go train to get better at that. I went to an Ultimo Dragon seminar to learn his style. I did all these things so that I can get better. But also, it's, when you hear the word technical wrestler, you usually think of like a certain aesthetic or a certain visual of who this wrestler is and how they carry themselves. And I want to be louder than that. I want to be more personality, more energy, more charismatic than what someone who doesn't watch a lot of wrestling, but they hear technical wrestler enough, they associate with this. I'm in a whole nother lane, but I still do what they do in that ring.
Hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. And it's very important. Like you said, like, when you hear the term technical wrestler, sometimes I'm thinking like, you know, some of that comes out of Stu Hart's dungeon. They know Dean Malenko, man of a thousand. And Dean was way more than that. But somebody who just knows like hold. Technical wrestler in 2022 is different from that.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, Danny Garcia is a technical wrestler, but he's really not. He's just a hard hitting pro wrestler who doesn't do a lot of flying moves. In this day and age, everyone does flying moves.
Right.
So I think someone who hits harder and doesn't do a moonsault might be more branded a technical wrestler. Am I right about this?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. For what people think of technical wrestling nowadays seems to be the well-rounded guy who can do a little bit of everything.
Right.
So you see Wheeler Yuta, he can do all the holds, the Lucha Libre and things like that. But he wrestled MJF. He dove halfway across the ring on a dive.
Just a wicked splash. So, agreed. Yep.
Wrestlers have gotten more athletic, so the term technical wrestler has evolved with that. So it's not just holds.
I didn't want to leave Tiger Style alone and the Bruce Lee influence. I'm a big Bruce Lee fan, too. Even to this day, I always take the stairs.
Yeah.
If you know, you know. That is a Bruce Lee quote, always take the stairs. So what does Tiger Style mean to you now? You said it changed from when you started to what it is now.
Yeah, so what it originally was just that, the Bruce Lee philosophy. But I knew getting the TV, it was going to have to be more than that because it has to be broader. It's not dumbing it down. It's creating something that everybody can understand. If there's a movie and things are too intricate to apply, like all the dialogue, it's hard to follow. But if you can make it easy enough for everyone to understand, then they'll enjoy it more. So what Tiger Style is just this loud personality who's also a technical wrestler.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And where does that, how does that relate to what you do outside of the ring?
Outside of the ring, I am a graphic designer. So if you watch my entrance before the firm, that tiger that shows up on the screen, I designed that. That's my logo.
Nice.
I have a little check mark. It's a flame mark. It's my icon logo. Like, I have all these knowledgeable things about business and branding from being a graphic designer. My first t-shirt in AEW, I designed my wrestling gear. I designed my mask. I designed my new boxing robe I'm going to be coming out with soon. I want to leave my imprint on so many things in professional wrestling and outside of wrestling too. I've did illustrations for a wrestling book. I don't think it's come out yet, but that is something I've done. There's an artist, Open Mike Eagle. He had a music video premiere on Adult Swim. I did a graphic that showed up on that. There's like a lot of stuff I've done as a graphic designer. I'm very proud of that. And something I want to get involved in professional wrestling once I'm done with the in-ring stuff is the visual presentation of something. Because I think wrestling, for the most part, was always like it looked this certain way or felt this certain way because this is what worked. So I want to figure out how to change things to look a little bit differently to appeal to more people like myself.
How old are you?
I am 28.
That's really cool, man. It's funny because, and this is what I love about pro wrestling that a lot of people don't understand. Some do, most do, but I always say being in pro wrestling is show business boot camp. You learn a little bit of everything. Now, some guys go into acting and some guys go into music or rapping or politics or book writing. This is the first time I've ever met a wrestler who's also a graphic. There might be a few others, to be honest with you, but the examples you just gave, pro wrestling is such an art.
Yeah.
Anytime you like take, okay, it's Jericho versus Lee Moriarty. You got 10 minutes and you're on in 2 hours or an hour, whatever it may be. We now have an open canvas like an artist would, and right. we have to paint our picture. How do we do that? I don't know. What do you got? What do you got? Blah, blah, blah. It's a true collaboration of art. When you create something out of nothing, that's art. So to hear your graphic design comparing and combining it with wrestling, it's a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, it's very easy. It's why I chose professional wrestling. I thought about doing MMA when I was younger, and the reason I chose wrestling is because I had more freedom to express myself in the ring and just visually. It's so much freedom, and I enjoy it like nothing else. Plus, I love being physical. Like, I'm an athlete,
yeah.
So it's just the perfect blend of both worlds.
How do you do your graphic art? Is it via computer? How do you create?
So usually it's on computer. Most of the times I'll draw something by hand first, scan it or take your photo, and then edit it on the computer. I've also recently got a tablet so I can draw on that. I've done photography. I've done video editing. So I've like learned After Effects to like learn how to animate my logo or just like do little things that I can put in my promos. When I was on the Independence, I've painted. I've had drawings in like congressional art shows back when I was in high school. I've designed t-shirts. So something I've worked on is making pro wrestling shirts not look like pro wrestling shirts, because sometimes people are embarrassed to wear them out, because what pro wrestling shirt is, it's a billboard. Mm-hmm. It's advertising your person. So when you're on TV, you see that shirt in the crowd. But my idea was to wear this something, is create something that can be worn every day, because I've done that and I've had people tell me, oh, that's a nice shirt. And then they found out it's a wrestling shirt. And that's my goal, is to appeal to people that aren't just in wrestling.
Wrestling fans, yeah.
Exactly, because we're trying to grow pro wrestling. So you need to appeal to things outside of wrestling.
Something too, with all the t-shirts I've had over the years, the ones that sell the best are just a word or a saying. I mean, we can go back to Austin 316. I mean, it's probably the most successful wrestling show, or NWO, for example. But for now, the ones for me that really sell well are like the Roots of Fight style, Chris Jericho established
in
1990.
Yeah.
One that I just put out was Jericho the Ocho. That was kind of an ESPN the Ocho thing.
Mm.
People like those types, like you said, aren't like, here's Jericho. Any shirts with your face on them never do good, right? Like that's what I've actually was. I would talk to, especially in WWE when the merch department was very involved. Not that we aren't any WWE, but this is, you know, a 40-year company that's got cups and straws and condoms and candy corn or whatever. And it's like anytime your face is on it, it doesn't sell.
Right.
And at first, like, what do you mean, man? But it's like, hey, I bet you the Stones sell way more logo lips. You know, everyone knows the Stones logo than a picture of Mick Jagger. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But as an artist and a designer, for you to figure that out, like you said, if it's designing your own shirts that don't look like wrestling shirts, that's a smart move.
Yeah, that's just, like you're saying, the logos. Logos are more universal than an individual's face, because someone can see this cool logo and then it's like, oh, like I will wear that. But if someone sees like a person's face, like my face or your face, and they don't watch wrestling at all, why would they wear it?
Who is this guy?
Yeah. So it's just one of those things. It's being more universal and understood by all audiences and not just a wrestling audience.
How did you get interested in that?
I just liked art and I liked creating merch. So I like streetwear designing a lot. Brands like The Hundreds, Chinatown Market, which is now just Market. But I remember during the pandemic, I actually got my certificate in streetwear marketing design. It was a collaboration between Complex and Yellow Brick. But I spent a few months, I did those courses, learning about streetwear and all that stuff so that I could put out my own things on Independence. Because yes, you know, in the Independence, there's so many wrestlers, there's so many people selling t-shirts, selling whatever, hats, hoodies, all this stuff. So it's, how am I going to make mine different? How can I make money?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. I treated all my stuff like a streetwear brand, not like a pro wrestling brand. So I would do drops. I would announce a date. I would promote it with like a graphic and things like that. And then I would sell this shirt and there would only be 60 or something and you could never get it again because I wanted to feel exclusive. And I did very well. I remember I made an ice cream logo shirt. It was like a Neapolitan tiger. And it was a ringer tee, which is very rare for pro wrestlers, because it's just generic shirts. And I sold out maybe in a couple hours of like 70 shirts or something.
Wow.
To the point where I ended up re-releasing it strictly just to use that money to like go for charity.
Sure.
But stuff like that, like that's my goal, is to be beyond professional wrestling and think differently so that I can make myself successful.
Diversify, right? How did you get interested and involved in pro wrestling?
So the first time I ever saw wrestling, it was my grandfather was watching it.
You're from Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, I'm from Pittsburgh.
Famous wrestling town.
Yeah, Kurt Angle, Bruno, all that.
Shane Douglas. Yeah, those are your top three. Well, I'm sure there's more, but yeah. I think Dominic Dominucci or Dominucci. I'm getting that wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, I met him in Pittsburgh recently.
Dominic Dominucci.
Yeah, he has big hands,
huge,
firm
right?
grip. It's crazy.
But Bruno and Kurt are the two Pittsburgh stalwarts, for sure.
They're the faces. But my grandfather was watching it. It was Rikishi and the Boogeyman. No, Rikishi and Booker T. So Rikishi does a stink face, and it's probably like an infamous scene. Booker T gets out the ring, pukes on Michael Cole. And I was like, I don't want to watch this. So, like, I went away from it a little bit. One night, I was 12 years old, was channel surfing, and I found the Boogeyman. And I saw his entrance, and I was like, this is so cool. This guy with this face paint, he's smashing a clock on his
worms
head. The worms.
And shit, yeah.
So, something that when I was younger, it would gross me out, but now I'm like in that teenage thing, got a little bit cooler. From then on, I was hooked. I showed my siblings the following week when they came home. Then we were watching SmackDown, Raw, found ECW, TNA. Found New Japan because I grew up with the internet, so it was easier to find stuff. And I was just obsessed.
You might be the first guy I've ever met that got into wrestling via the Boogeyman.
Yeah, I've been hearing that a lot. But that was what I'm into, the theatrics.
It's so funny. I have to tell you this as a little bit of trivia. Do you know who coined the phrase stink face?
No.
Me.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
There's a Kevin Smith movie called Mallrats.
Oh,
where
yeah.
The stink palm,
mm-hmm.
he sticks his hand in his ass and shakes it, and it's the stink face, same thing.
So oh, okay.
It's not rocket science, but there you go. So you got hooked on it at a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
When did you decide that I want to try and do this for a living?
Pretty much immediately, I want to say I wanted to do it, but as a kid, you're just like, I want to do this.
I want to be an astronaut.
Yeah.
I want to be an Anna Jones, yeah.
I think it was when I got to high school, I started taking it seriously, and I would look for local wrestling schools. I even did my senior project on pro wrestling and all that stuff.
How did you do your senior project in pro wrestling?
So our senior project was to create a debate. So my debate was, is pro wrestling a sport? So I did it on that. And I actually just remembered like a few weeks ago that I interviewed two professional wrestlers for this. One of them I work with now, and that's Kyle O'Reilly.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did you get an interview with Kyle O'Reilly when you're in high school?
Somehow I found his Facebook, like his actual, not the
internet,
the character, whatever, Kyle O'Reilly, but his actual name and all that stuff. I messaged him. He was open to answering these questions.
Wow.
And I got it done. But yeah.
So what was your take? Is pro wrestling a sport or was it not a sport? What was your thoughts on it?
So I see it as a sport because people think whatever, the winner is predetermined, all this stuff, or it's a routine, but gymnastics is a routine and that's a sport. And even if you don't want to say that, we are competing as a team together in that ring against the other matches or whatever show might be running against us. It's a sport. We're athletes.
Lee, I'm going to blow your mind right now. This is one of my all-time goals. And I've set a few goals in my life that I've achieved.
Hmm.
I literally want to go in front of the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, and pitch pro wrestling as an Olympic sport. Now you might go, how can you do that? It's all, no, hold on, stop right there. Gymnastics, pairs gymnastics, figure skating, pairs figure skating. What is that? It's two people working together to put on the best performance possible.
Mm-hmm.
Then the judges give you a score. And if you're a doubles figure skating, which is one of the top rated sports in the Winter Olympics,
mm-hmm.
America finished first, Russia's second, Japan is third. There is no way that we could not do the same with pro wrestling.
I 100% am for it.
You know what I mean? Like you could be like, I don't know, let's just say it's Jericho and Omega from Canada and it's Danielson and frickin', I don't know, MJF. And it's, you know, Claudio and some other guy from Switzerland and Ireland. And you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
If I think it's, like you said, it's just as much of an athletic contest and a routine as gymnastics, figure skating, swimming, synchronized swimming.
Yep.
So I'm down with you on that.
Yeah, definitely. Plus, it's going to grow professional wrestling so much if we were able to do something like that. I think there's going to be backlash, obviously.
There always will be, yeah.
But I think that's just because people need wrestling to be this. Like, it needs to be like MMA. So they can't accept it being this other thing, or it's art, so it's not like it can't be in the middle for some reason for some people.
It's neither fish nor fowl in entertainment. It's not real, but it is real, and it's predetermined, but it's not. And it, you know, we don't really know how to compartmentalize it, right?
Yeah, it's professional wrestling is its own thing, and you can compare
anything else.
Yeah, you can compare it to some things, but then there's going to be completely different in other aspects of that. It's just its own thing in its own world, and it's special.
So you did your senior project on wrestling, and then what? And you started looking for wrestling schools. You said,
yeah, I searched around. I actually found a wrestling school. It was probably 15 minutes from where I lived at the time. And the reason I found it is because I searched up Kurt Angle. So my trainer's names are Brandon Kay and Dean Radford. Brandon Kay is one of the guys.
Brandon Cade?
Kay, just a K.
Gotcha.
He helped Kurt Angle get into ring shape for the WWE. It was him and a guy named Sean Shocker Evans. But whenever I found that out, I was, oh, yeah, I'm going to go here. So I went to an independent show. I met Brandon Kay, talked with him. And then I was like, this is where I'm going. Waited a few years. I did college, you know, the family thing. Like, I go to college.
Gotta do it.
Make
your mom happy.
Yeah. They were very against me being a professional wrestler because they grew up watching wrestling. And unfortunately, a lot of wrestlers at their time were passing away from the things. Like,
you're right. The culture has changed now, though.
Yeah. So they were against it, but they understood. I went to college for digital graphic design. I actually qualified for financial aid, and I used that financial aid money because I was also in a program called Job Corps, which paid for all my stuff. I used the financial aid money to save up for my car in wrestling school.
Your car in wrestling school?
Yeah.
A car to get to wrestling school?
Oh, car, yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Well, you've joined the list of Christian, Jay Riso, Britt Baker, of people who took their student loans and spent it on wrestling school. So it's okay. You're all right.
Yeah. It works out.
We won't tell the dean of the University of Pittsburgh.
Nah, I did everything legal. It's okay.
So what was it like for you when you started going to wrestling school? Because that's another thing where people don't understand. Just like, what, wrestling school? Like, what is that, you know?
Yeah, it was very cool. So I did my tryout at the end of January 2015. And not to brag, but I actually broke the record for the fastest time in my tryout.
Fastest time of what?
Completing all the stuff. So we had to... We had to run for a certain amount of time, do a certain amount of push-ups, squats, all that stuff, just to see. It was more of a mental test to see if we would quit.
Right.
I got through that like easily because I actually did the smart thing, which was I asked, like, what's a tryout? And every day for like 3 months, I did that just so I could be prepared. And did
you
that.
You asked kind of what would be expected of you in this tryout.
Right.
And trained accordingly.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Just got everything ready, prepared mentally because I was like, this is my shot. This is what I want to do. I'm going to be as prepared as possible. Did that, passed my tryout. The following week is when we started doing like the rolls and all that stuff and taking the bumps. We had to do 100 bumps our first day, I think. And
think about that, right? Like people that might not understand taking 100 bumps in a day, like, oh my gosh. I trained with a guy called Mr. Hito, and when sometimes people go, like I say, I'm the last survivor of Stu Hart's dungeon. Yeah. Oh, you didn't train in the dungeon. No, I did train in the dungeon with Mr. Hito, who said, take 200 bumps. It's like, dude, what? So yeah, that's hard.
Yeah, it's rough, especially when you think about it. I've heard people have compared to taking a bump to like a small car accident, like the whiplash.
Hitting you at 10 miles an hour or something
like
that.
Yeah. So doing that 100 times is crazy. And then I was like, can I bump around a little bit more? So I did like 25 extra ones just because I wanted to get it down right because I wanted to move on to the next thing. I was so eager just to keep going and progressing. But I remember passing that trial and just almost crying to the point because I was like, I did it. Like, this is where I wanted to be. This is where I am now. And just from there, nonstop, every week training, going to work, all that stuff.
So who'd you have your first match against?
My first match was against one of the trainers. He was like one of the advanced class trainers. It was Crusher Hansen and Max Daniels. They were the enforcers. Their gimmicks were like they were referees but wrestlers. And then my tag team partner, a guy named Gannon Jones Jr., who's now in an independent team called TME. They've done a few darks and stuff like that. They're big athletes. They're really talented.
I think I've seen them.
Yeah, they're great. But I remember that match. I think I found out that night, but I won the tag titles of that company, like my first match, and I was freaking out because that was just so much pressure. But I remember that first being match, winning the tag team championships, and just feeling really special then.
So what was kind of your first like big break for you that you would consider that?
There's two. So the one would be when I went to Mexico. I did a few seminars. Let's talk about
this, 'cause you mentioned that a few times.
Yeah.
How'd you end up in Mexico?
A guy named DJ Z, now he's known as Joaquin Wild on SmackDown.
Was he on SmackDown? What's his name?
Joaquin Wild now.
Oh, okay.
He's in that trio, Legado del Fantasma.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, but he trained in West Virginia with one of the people that I consider my mentor, Shirley Doe. But he would do stuff. He did seminars, and then he basically, out of the blue, one day texted me while I was at work. He said, "Yo, come to Mexico." And this was kind of a test from him to see if I was really committed to it. So
Pittsburgh to Mexico, that's not far.
Yeah. And at the time, I had never been out of the state of PA to wrestle.
Right.
So I got on the flight, went down to Mexico. And the funny thing is, I was supposed to be with DJ Z for that week. But this is at the time, if people know about, he had that life-threatening injury. He took a 450. And it ruptured something. He had to get his abdomen cut open.
That just happened to a guy in Mexico right now. Not Bandito. Really? I can't remember what his name is. But that did. He got hit so hard with the 450 that it ruptured his intestine.
Yeah.
That happened to DJ Z as well.
It's scary. And I think maybe
Vikingo, I think his guy's name is.
Oh, yeah. I did see that. He's out for like 3 weeks. Yeah, I saw that.
The dude landed like as hard as you could land somebody on a 450 or whatever, like as hard as you could land someone's stomach. It was terrible. So that's what happened to DJ Z. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because he was in Impact for a while too, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, he just took a 450, something he's taken 100 times or something. It was just night, it happened. So he sent me up to stay with a guy named Lowrider and his wife Sadika. They're also wrestlers. And then I just went all around Mexico. My first match was actually in the same building that Ultimo Dragon debuted in Mexico, which is really cool.
So you've mentioned this a couple times. Let's go into this. So Ultimo Dragon is one of my all-time favorite opponents.
Yeah.
Like, and super influential in the early years of my career. I love Dragon. I probably worked with him 100 times is not enough, maybe 150, to where we would get in the backdrop spot, which would be like...
Yeah.
So what a great guy and one of the best workers ever in so many different styles. So you mentioned that you went to a seminar and what's your connection with Ultimo Dragon?
It's funny that we're talking about this now because I realized like he's linked to a lot more stuff than I realized, but like that in Mexico, but also I did a tryout for a company called AIW. And the reason I was invited to this trial is because I did an Ultimo Dragon seminar. I was like one of the only people from Pittsburgh to like drive 2.5 hours like out there. And
to where?
Ohio. It's just like, it's not far, but...
So somebody just brings Dragon in to do a seminar.
Yeah, it was a seminar and a show. So that was like how they paid or whatever.
Gotcha.
I did this. I guess I was the standout in that. So they
did
this
trial. What did you have to do at his seminar? What were you doing? What did he teach you?
It was just the basics, like the rolls and stuff. He showed us his arm drag, like the step over. The arm.
Nice trial.
Yeah, he did that one. He showed us like the headlocks, like the differences. We do headlocks here with our grips one way and they do it a little bit differently so that bone's on the cheek.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like these little small things that are different to him and how he learned it. But doing that got me into AIW, which was kind of the catalyst for my other breakout moment was when I wrestled Alex Shelley, who's become my mentor and I'm like his first protege, the new generation. So that submission that people see me do on TV, the Border City Stretch, he passed that down to me. And the two people in professional wrestling he passed it down to is myself and Johnny Gargano.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I just met Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin for the first time ever in my 30 years or whatever, 32 years. They were just here a couple
of at All Out, actually.
At All Out.
Yeah.
First time ever. So obviously very pedigreed guys. So Alex Shelley is your official mentor.
Yeah.
Do you still talk to Alex to this day?
Oh, all the time.
And what do you ask him? What do you say? Does he watch your matches? Does he give you feedback?
Yeah, just about that stuff, being a technical wrestler and learning like flowing. And it was also someone that convinced me to go to school for that streetwear marketing because Alex Shelley was in Ring of Honor or New Japan, all this stuff. He stepped away to get his degree as a physical therapist, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was just telling me how much happier he was in wrestling because wrestling wasn't the only thing he depended on. So like the money and all that stuff, you know how it is.
Yeah.
He felt so much more free because he didn't have that pressure. And this was a little bit before the pandemic happened where nobody can wrestle. We couldn't do anything.
Nothing.
like you guys were able to do that after a little bit of time, like the no fans and stuff. Yeah. But as independents, we couldn't do anything for a while. So it was all the more reason to do something like that. But he inspires me with that stuff and just how he works. He has a crazy schedule. He'll wrestle maybe 3 days on the weekend, go right into his office, work with patients for like up to 8 to 12 hours a day. He's just such an inspiring person.
That inspires
me. Yeah.
The work ethic.
Mm-hmm. So I would say he's a mentor. I would say DJZ, Walking Wild, is a mentor to me because every once in a while he'll hit me up and just give me different tips about how to prepare and train. Mm-hmm. I would say a guy named Shirley Doe, who trained Walking Wild, is a mentor. Mm-hmm. I have so many people to thank for getting me where I am.
That's great.
Yeah.
Let's talk about when you were in Mexico. What were some of the experiences you had there being kind of a stranger in a strange land?
Oh, it's so different. So I didn't know until I got there that traditional Lucha Libre rules were 3-on-3 and 2 out of 3 falls. So that was something to adapt to.
You didn't know until you got there.
Yeah. Nope. And my first match, it was fine because there was people that spoke English. One of the guys now works for New Japan. His name's Doki. But I worked with him. There was a match I had after Lowrider left. He came back to Texas or whatever. And I was with Sadika, his wife. She didn't speak English. I had this match. And I was like, is this 2 out of 3 falls or not? And I was like, oh, no, just one fall or whatever. It was not one fall. I ended up kicking out of someone's move or whatever that I thought was, like, I'm supposed to kick out. It was in their finisher because they told me all this stuff, and it was, like, chaotic. I remember coming back. My money's missing because I didn't hide it well enough.
Shit.
Yeah, like, I had a very chaotic experience. I used to come out with headphones, and I would have my phone on me. I would play music to the ring and all that stuff. I didn't hide my phone well enough, so someone ribbed me and they took the phone and hid it from me. But it was really a thing just telling me, because sometimes like kids would sneak into the back and take stuff. So it was just telling me, like, hey, be a little more careful. Yeah. It's just so different. I remember them telling me when I got there, maybe a week before me or something, someone got all their stuff stolen out of a hotel room, like their laptop and everything. It's just one of those things you got to be careful. But it also,
were you in Mexico City or where were you at?
I stayed in a place called Neza, which is
Neza,
like...
Neza, yeah. So continue. So you were talking about getting stolen, but this is the other side of the coin.
Yeah. But it's a very good experience overall, and I think I became a better wrestler because of that. I became a better base, which is the person that catches the flyers and all that stuff, because I learned the authentic tricks. There's so many little things in Lucha Libre that you can't learn just by watching it. You have to be in the ring with someone who does it.
I mean, obviously, my start was in Lucha Libre as well, in Arena Mexico. And, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense here, for example, but this wrestling doesn't make a lot of sense there. And Japanese wrestling doesn't make a lot of sense in Germany. Like, everywhere you go, you take little tricks and little pieces so that when you get back, because I'm Canadian, but we're from North America. The idea is always come back to North America.
Right.
But anything that you learned on your travels in any of these other territories, you can use to your advantage. So that's great for you, because there's so many young wrestlers that never had a chance to go to Mexico, you know, and beware of your phone being stolen, stolen, or don't eat the tacos out of the back of the old lady's car, because you're laughing because it's true, right? But I think that gives you not just great wrestling experience, but life experience as well.
Yeah, it's cool, like riding around on the subways, just seeing the differences in daily life that these people live, or like how they do grocery shopping, or like going to butchers and things like that. Another thing is I got to train with El Oriental, who's like a really famous old school luchador.
Oriental.
Learning that stuff. Yeah, and learning that they start wrestling training so young there. And because I was a beginner in Lucha Libre, I was like early 20s at the time. I was in a class with like 10 and 11-year-old kids, because I'm a beginner luchador. So I'm learning all these llaves and submission holds from El Oriental with a bunch of kids.
Now, is Oriental, is his sisters Esther Moreno and Rosie Moreno?
I believe so. There was a big flyer there, and I think they were
the whole
all
family.
Yeah.
So here's the best thing. This shows how long I've been on the job. When you talk about El Oriental, the legendary Oriental, I remember working for his dad when he was just probably maybe the same age as me. Yeah. And I used to hang out with Esther Moreno and Rosie Moreno all the time, because they would come to Japan for the same company that I was in. And I worked for the same company in Mexico as well. So I think of El Oriental as like freaking, what's our guy? Fuego del Sol. Like a kid. And now he's a legendary guy. I'm like, oh, man. That's so funny. That's great that you got to work with those things, because that's old school luchadors who know the true secret and magic of Lucha Libre, right?
Yeah, I remember him going through all the different holds. He would do a whole transition this way. He'd be like, that's Lucha. Or he'd transition, that's Lucha. Because the more modern style you see, like Vikingo and stuff like that, that's a more evolved thing from the blend of independent wrestling from here in the States, from them coming up here and going back down there. But if you watch the older Lucha Libre, like Super Astro and stuff, that's stuff Super like that. Astro. I love watching. That's such a very different style than what it is. It was like all pro wrestling evolves.
But here's the thing though, Lee, and I think you understand this. Another reason why it's great that you went there. A lot of people that don't know, it's just all the people that don't know. If you hear Lucha Libre, oh, that's just kind of high spots. And it's not. It's such a style to it. And yeah, of course, there's high spots, but it's really the secret of Lucha Libre is not the high spots. Right. It's the story that they're telling within this world of Lucha Libre. And that's one thing that's great that you got to experience that, because if you don't know, you're just thinking, oh, it's just flipping and flopping and flying. It doesn't mean anything. So wrong on so many levels.
Yeah. I don't think people realize, if they don't watch Lucha Libre, how well trained they are and how smart they are. So in American wrestling, we typically work the left side.
Yeah.
And there was this common belief that they work the right side in Mexico, but it's not the right side. They work both sides.
Right.
They can do both things. And their cardio, I remember talking to Regal, and he talks about their breathing techniques, is how they don't get blown up and how they have like this little pocket, like it looks like a six-pack type thing right here, and that's because their breathing techniques. And that's why these luchadors can be 50 or 60 years old and still going, because of that. And their bumps aren't the same anymore, as they do more rolls.
You're right. You're talking about mentors. One of my mentors, I haven't seen him in 30 years, but my early years of development was Negro Casas, who in my opinion is the greatest luchador of all time. He's 10 years older than I am, which makes him 61, and he's still main eventing. And still, like, is he as good as Negro Casas from 1992? No. Is he still better than 80% of the people? Yes, because he knows what to do, right? And that's what I always loved about Lucha Libre. You could find a Negro or a Silver King or an Atlantis or a Dr. Wagner, all these cats that were all so good that they could wrestle anywhere. Right. They could come into AEW tonight and you'd go, oh, these guys are great. Who are these guys? And that's the truth. Like Bandito, when I work with Bandito, like, this guy's great. Mm-hmm. Who is this guy? Yeah. Well, he doesn't speak English. Well, he does speak English, but he's a super luchador. But what does that even mean? He's a wrestler from Mexico. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's good that you get to experience that. So let's talk about how you got into AEW, because obviously you worked around.
Yeah.
I don't know if you worked anywhere else, like, but you have a little bit of a name value, and we come to Pittsburgh, right?
Right.
I just remember I hear this, because Moriarty to me is like a Sherlock Holmes. Right? That's like a great English name, right? Mm. So talk to me how that kind of came about.
It came about a few days beforehand. So I was wrestling on an independent show. It was IWTV's 100th episode, and it was myself and Trish Adora against Orange Cassidy and Chris Statlander.
Oh, wow.
I had this match, and it went really well.
And Chris and Orange were already working with us?
Yes.
Gotcha.
So it was a few days before they came to Pittsburgh. It was out in New Jersey. And I remember Wheeler Yuta was like, hey, are you in town or whatever? So him and Orange Cassidy got me booked for that dark. I think it was the debut of Rampage that week, or it was like one of the first ones, but I remember it was the live Dynamite on Wednesday and then the live Rampage. And I had my first match on the live Rampage. Originally, it was supposed to be Darby Allin, but it got changed because Darby did something in the Raptors. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't want him to be shown twice, which makes the complete sense.
Perfect sense. Yeah. I think he was watching Punk or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had I got to wrestle Dante Martin, who's someone I got to know a little bit, him and Darius from the Independents. We had a lot of fun. Then I think a few weeks passed, it was All Out in Chicago. Maybe the Sunday before, Christopher Daniels hit me up in an email. I was like, is this really his email or is this a fake one?
Yeah.
I got the information. I came out. I faced Janela. And I found out later after the match that was kind of like my tryout.
So obviously, because Tony keeps his ear to the ground on what's going on the independent scene, you must have had some buzz to get, like, that. If that was your tryout on one match.
Yeah.
Did you have some steam at the time, or was, like...
I would say so. because I was doing all of the top independents. I was doing GCW. I was doing AIW. I had debuted for PWG maybe a month or that month.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, I was doing all these things and making a name for myself going down to Mexico. I think I was in Mexico the week before that, too, the week or two, or maybe it was after. But I went down there and did a tournament and wrestled Ricky Marvin. I was doing all this stuff. And being an artist, too, I was creating a name for myself online because presentation is everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Show business, man.
So I built up this reputation. I also had done some MLW before that. They had offered me a deal, but I didn't want to sign anything because at this time, so many independent wrestlers were getting signed. And some before they were, I don't want to say ready, but before they had established themselves.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I grew up like watching Danielson, AJ Styles, all these guys establish themselves on independence and being that guy that like kids are watching in the computer labs and all this stuff. So I wanted to be that. I remember having the same conversation with Garcia. Like, we wanted to be those guys on independence before we signed anything. We didn't just want to sign a contract to sign something. So I did a few things at MLW and they were completely fine with me not signing a contract. They supported me and everything. I signed with them at AEW later. I honor my commitments there and all that stuff. But yeah, I was building a name on the independent scene as being the guy that was wrestling everywhere, doing everything, all the big goals I was hitting.
So it's like you mentioned Garcia and Yuta. Like, are those kind of like, for me, like when I came up, it was like Malenko, Guerrero, Benoit, Mysterio. Like, those are your guys, right? Are these guys your guys? Wheeler and Danny and...
I would say so. I would say those two are my biggest rivals and the people that I always feel like I'm chasing because I see they're like, I was successful maybe a little bit above them at one point in the independence. Then they were successful above me. So we're all like climbing this ladder trying to chase
each
other.
But you kind of started together, right?
Yeah. Like, we knew who each other were. I knew Yuta a little bit longer than Garcia. Garcia and I knew each other online before we actually met in person. The first time we met in person ended up being our first match. But those are like two of the guys, someone named Trey Lamar, Calvin Tankman. There's numerous guys, but I would definitely say like...
How does that make you feel right now where you're in the firm,
mm-hmm.
Danny's in the Jericho Appreciation Society, Wheeler's in the Blackpool Combat Club. You guys have done pretty good for yourselves.
Oh, yeah. I love it, especially because I get to fight them. I don't got to be on my team with them, so I get to fight them. And that's what makes me better is having the rivals to compete with and grow with. Being on the team is great, but... being able to fight each other, that's special.
So you must be really excited right now as we start to wind down the fact that like you've had this great, it's been a short career. Mm-hmm. When was your first match?
My first match was December 2015.
Okay, so here we are almost December of 22, so it's 7 years. Mm-hmm. And now you're on national TV.
Yeah.
Now your parents, who maybe didn't want you to leave designer art school, graphic design, are probably excited for you. Mm-hmm. How is it for you now that you actually have a little bit of an established hold in AEW, but you're not at the top yet,
right?
But you are one of the players that we're talking about in this middle area that's with upward projection.
It's inspiring because I was down there and now I'm moving up and I want to make sure I keep moving up instead of staying stagnant or complacent. And seeing all the competition is, it can seem daunting, but it's just something that motivates me more because my goal is to be the best professional wrestler in the world. And obviously that's something that's very subjective, but I think the best professional wrestler is someone who's consistent. So someone who does something consistent at a high level to me is the best. Right. It doesn't have to be one person, but it can be a group of people. You've had an amazing year. Danielson's had an amazing year. Moxley's had an amazing year. Like, those are the guys that can be considered the best. And you can make an argument against it, but you also can't dispute the argument. So me being at the spot I'm in motivates me to keep climbing higher and going further. Plus, it's special because Moriarty is my real last name. So when my family came to the show in Pittsburgh, seeing my name on a match graphic or something, that's special because, you know, they helped me get where I am. They're hardworking, middle class people.
It's such a great last name too.
Yeah, it's sick. My gym class teacher in high school would always call me professor because of the Sherlock Holmes wrestling.
I'm sorry that I fell into that. Oh, Sherlock Holmes. It's a great name. Moriarty. It's amazing. Yeah. Last question for you, man. You've had some great matches, but what's your favorite match that you've ever had?
My favorite match that I've ever had is a very tough question. I would say one of them was against Danielson this year, just because Danielson and Rey Mysterio are the two wrestlers that I consider like the greatest of all time, personally. But also, I wrestled Takeshita, who's been here in AEW. I wrestled him out in the Independence, and that was probably one of my favorite matches also.
With Takeshita and with
Danielson.
Danielson. I forgot that you wrestled Danielson, because one of the original things that actually kicked off this whole Jericho Appreciation Society was Danielson mentioning, oh, maybe we should start a faction with Wheeler Yuta and Danny Garcia and Lee Moriarty. So that must have been kind of cool to be in there with him, like you said.
Yeah, it was amazing. And the funny thing about that promo, I had no idea that happened until way after, because people online were tagging
Twitter
me.
After.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what happened? What did Danielson say? Because
me? He knows me?
Because yeah. I couldn't hear it from the back. You know how the mics are. Sometimes you can't hear it. But then finally, I was like, oh, wow. And then finding out a few weeks later, I'm wrestling him. It was crazy.
Well, dude, it's been great talking to you. Like we said, I knew nothing about you an hour ago. And now I am impressed by your intelligence and your goals. And I think I can't wait to do the job for you one of these days.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you.